Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Paul Kennedy's The Rise and Fall of the Great Powers, Economic Change and Military Conflict from 1500 to 2000 is a sweeping study of how nations gain, sustain, and lose global influence. Rather than treating diplomacy and war as separate from economics, Kennedy argues that long-term shifts in production, finance, technology, and trade patterns set the boundaries within which strategy operates. From early modern Europe through the World Wars and the Cold War, the book traces how major states built military capabilities, funded overseas ambitions, and competed for security and status. A central idea is that strength is never purely military. It rests on a society's capacity to generate resources over time. Kennedy also explores the recurring problem of overextension, when commitments and costs outgrow an economy's ability to support them. Written for general readers as well as students of history and international relations, the book connects centuries of events into a coherent framework for thinking about power in the modern world. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, power is a balance between wealth and force. A defining contribution of the book is its insistence that military outcomes are tightly linked to economic foundations. Kennedy presents power as a relationship between a state's resource base and the demands placed upon it by security competition. Armies, navies, fortifications, and later industrial warfare all require sustained taxation, credit, and productive capacity. As economies expand, states can fund innovation, logistics, and larger forces. When economies stagnate or face structural limits, military effectiveness and diplomatic leverage tend to erode. This approach shifts attention from dramatic battles to the quieter mechanisms that make campaigns possible: shipbuilding capacity, access to raw materials, administrative competence, and the credibility of public finance. It also explains why sudden military reforms rarely work unless paired with broader economic changes. By tracing centuries of competition, Kennedy highlights how states that align strategy with economic reality tend to endure longer than those that gamble on prestige. The result is a practical lens for reading history. Ask what a government can reliably mobilize, how quickly it can adapt to technological change, and whether its commitments match its long-run capacity. Secondly, early modern rivalry and the shifting center of European strength. Covering the period from 1500 onward, the book examines how European states competed in an environment shaped by maritime expansion, colonial trade, and evolving military systems. Kennedy outlines how different political and economic arrangements affected national performance. Some powers benefited from commercial networks, effective taxation, and naval reach, while others struggled with fragmented administration or costly continental wars. The narrative emphasizes that success was not simply a matter of brave generals, but of stable institutions that could raise revenue, manage debt, and encourage productive enterprise. As trade routes and financial hubs changed, so did the ability to sustain fleets and overseas commitments. The book also highlights the interaction between technological developments and economic capacity, showing how improvements in shipping, weapons, and organization rewarded states that could invest consistently and learn quickly. Over time, the European balance of power shifted as new fiscal and commercial models proved more effective than older imperial structures. This section helps readers see the modern world system forming through competition, where economic modernization, not just battlefield skill, increasingly determined who could project force across oceans and protect far-flung interests. Thirdly, industrialization and the transformation of great power competition. Kennedy treats industrialization as a turning point that radically changed the scale, speed, and cost of military conflict. Once production, rail transport, mass armaments, and modern finance became decisive, the ranking of powers depended heavily on industrial output, technological innovation, and access to resources. States that industrialized earlier gained advantages not only in weaponry, but in logistics and endurance, enabling larger mobilizations and sustained campaigns. The book explores how industrial growth altered strategic planning, pushing governments to think in terms of national economies rather than traditional dynastic or regional calculations. It also examines how late industrializers could sometimes leap forward by adopting newer methods, intensifying rivalry and insecurity. In this framework, arms races are not only political choices, but reflections of what economies can support and what leaders believe they must match. Industrialization also made imperial competition more consequential, because colonies and trade routes could supply raw materials and markets. Kennedy's analysis encourages readers to connect factories, shipping lanes, and financial systems to grand strategy, showing why industrial-era conflicts were so destructive and why economic disruption became a strategic weapon in its own right. Fourthly, imperial overstretch and the costs of global commitments. One of the book's most widely discussed themes is imperial or strategic overstretch, the condition in which a state's global obligations exceed the economic resources available to maintain them. Kennedy presents overstretch as a recurring pattern rather than an occasional mistake. Successful powers expand their commitments during periods of confidence, then face rising costs as rivals catch up, technologies evolve, or domestic growth slows. Military spending, overseas bases, alliances, and interventions can create a burdensome fixed cost that constrains economic investment at home. Meanwhile, competitors may be strengthening economically, making the relative burden heavier even if absolute spending remains high. The book shows that decline often appears first as a squeeze on choices. Leaders must trade social stability, economic modernization, and defense priorities against one another. Importantly, Kennedy does not suggest that commitments are always wrong, but that sustainability matters. States that recalibrate strategy, share burdens, or adjust ambitions can stabilize their position. Those that deny limits risk sudden reversals. This topic provides a useful tool for evaluating any era, measure commitments, compare them to economic trends, and watch for the political incentives that delay necessary adjustment. Lastly, 20th century shocks and the reshaping of global power. In the 20th century, Kennedy links two world wars, the reorganization of empires, and the Cold War to deeper economic and technological shifts. Total war demanded unprecedented mobilization of industry, labor, and scientific research, rewarding societies that could coordinate production and finance at scale. The wars accelerated the relative decline of some traditional European powers, while elevating states with larger economic bases and the ability to innovate rapidly. Kennedy also addresses how ideology and security dilemmas interacted with these material factors, shaping alliance systems and strategic choices. The Cold War era illustrates the tension between maintaining expansive military capabilities and sustaining economic dynamism, particularly as nuclear weapons, advanced aerospace systems, and global commitments drove costs upward. At the same time, growth patterns in different regions altered the long-run balance, forcing reassessment of what leadership and dominance could mean in an interconnected world. By extending the analysis toward the end of the century, Kennedy encourages readers to see the modern international system as fluid rather than fixed, shaped by productivity, demographic trends, and technological change as much as by diplomacy. The overall lesson is that the distribution of power changes when economic performance changes, even if politics tries to freeze the status quo. In conclusion, this book suits readers who want a big-picture explanation of international history, including students of history and political science, policy professionals, and general readers interested in why some nations dominate for a time and then fade. It benefits the reader's life by offering a disciplined way to think about complex events, look for underlying capacities, incentives, and constraints, rather than assuming outcomes come from personalities or single battles. That habit of analysis transfers well to understanding today's headlines, from defense budgets to trade disputes, and helps readers evaluate claims about national strength with clearer criteria. Compared with many works that focus narrowly on campaigns or leaders, Kennedy's value is integration. He connects economic structure, technology, finance, and strategy across five centuries, allowing readers to compare eras and recognize recurring pressures such as overstretch, arms race dynamics, and the importance of sustained productivity. The book is also worth buying because it provides a durable framework rather than a short-lived interpretation of one conflict. Even when readers disagree with specific emphases, the core model invites productive debate and offers a coherent map for thinking about how power is built, paid for, and tested over time. If you would like to support Paul Kennedy, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.